when you walk into the ring for the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, God bless the South. God bless our white brothers in South Africa. That little sound bite that you just heard was, we used to call him your chief. His name is Art Frith. This is the side. He was a retired Navy signal. In the Army, we called it Signal Corps. He was Signal Radio. He ran the board, what we call the board. Matter of fact, Winston Smith, who used to be one of us with the political cesspool, gave everybody nicknames, named me the Bombardier, named James Edwards Baby Boy. He named Art Frith the Lord of the Board. Art Frith ran the board at our old concrete block radio station in Tipton County in the Wolf River bottoms, surrounded by swamps and snakes and right down the edge of bean fields. But I thought you'd like to hear that. That was Art Frith. I sure miss him. He did work for the political cesspool, did work for us. He was just a wonderful guy, but I had to get that in there to honor Art and to honor South Africa. We honor everybody on Blood River Radio. But anyway, people, just in case you know, we're holding on when we did the first hour. We're holding those guys over the first hour. We think it's very important that we talk about what we talked about the first hour, return to the land, the legalities, the intricacies you have to go through. If you're a white person, by God, how dare you want to get off by yourself and live away from these feral black animals. All you have to do is look at any YouTube clip, news clip, and there's some city burning down as we speak. Now I'm going to shut up and go back right to, by the way, I'd like to also give a credit again to Tennessee Ben. Ben is the one who secured this interview. He got Peter on. Thank you so much, Ben, for doing that. And Peter, yes, sir. Any questions you have, Ben, before you go? Peter, is there any other questions you have for our attorney who's on the line right now, Jason Robb?
Oh, yeah, sure. So, you know, basic constitutional rights, Title II Civil Rights Act. There's a lot of pro-right white groups in the United States. You know, there's us, there's Patriot Front, there's a lot of various activist clubs. There's a whole lot of pro-right white groups nowadays. And a lot of Americans, I think they assume that if you want to start a pro-white organization, you can't, because it's just flat out illegal to discriminate because of someone's ethnic background. So, like, I want to start a group of only white people. I can't do it because it's illegal. And I think that's a common misconception that a lot of people have. They don't realize that there's, like, these sort of statutory exemptions in Title II for private clubs and that kind of thing. So what would you say, like, some general advice for somebody who's trying to start a pro-white club? What should you do to make sure that you are actually a private club and you can legally make a pro-white group?
Sure. Well, for one is, a lot of it depends if it's just a bunch of people trying to get together to associate with themselves. There's been several Supreme Court cases that have said that you have what's called freedom of association. We've had that challenge in the federal courts in the past over the years, and the courts have routinely said that you have a right to associate with other people. Even so-called racist groups have a right to associate themselves. And so when you have white people in general who wants to come together and maybe form an organization or it could be a club or a political organization, obviously, the main thing I always tell people is, you know, don't ever do anything that's illegal at all, because the government is wanting to try to destroy groups. And so the best way people can do things is what we've been calling is localism, is there are people in your areas, in your regions, in various states that can come together and try to promote their Western culture, their Western heritage in their area. And so as long as they're doing that, they're not doing anything illegal, then there's really nothing that the government can do to come after them. And so from that perspective, they're pretty much safe. You're always going to have people from the enemy that wants to say that you're doing something illegal, that you can't associate with each other. And so they're trying to throw a fear tactic with our people, saying that you can't do anything because if you do, the government's going to come after you. So as long as you're not doing anything illegal, you're pretty good to do whatever you need to do to promote your local communities, your local organizations, your local groups from a pro-white perspective. And so a lot of people don't have to actually form a group themselves as far as, start an LLC or a corporation. They can be a loose-knit organization as far as calling themselves a name and just associate with other like-minded people. If they're going to want to start an actual group where they're going to be forming a corporation, they can do that as well. And as long as they're, not doing anything illegally or advocating illegal activities, then they're pretty much safe. And that's what the enemy does not want. They don't want our people to do things the legal route. They want us to do illegal stuff because it's easy for them to tear down groups and organizations that are doing stuff illegally. But when you're going out there and you're promoting a white cause and a white heritage and white culture and trying to associate with yourselves, with other like-minded people, it's very, very hard for the government to do anything against you. And so most of this is just a fear tactic, and they're trying to cause people to be afraid to associate with people like Return to the Land or other groups who's trying to promote a white cause and a white agenda and try to protect their culture. And so they use that fear tactic. And so listeners out there need to be aware is the government is not all powerful. We have still liberties. We still have ability to associate with like-minded white people. And as long as you're doing that, you're safe.
So in other words, we can start a school. We could have an all-white school if we did it legal. So that would be legal, Jason? Say a grammar school, high school for all whites, say no blacks allowed, no Hispanics allowed, et cetera. So that would be legal?
It depends on what state you live in. For example, in Arkansas, you can have a private school, and there's no really definition of what a private school is. A private school could be 5 people, it could be 3 people, it could be 10, it could be 20. So you can have a private school, and that's different from homeschooling. And so Arkansas is very, very favorable for people that are wanting homeschool or even do private school. But another state may be totally different. So it really depends on which state you live in. We are a big promoter of homeschooling because it really gives the parents the ability to educate and train their children as they seem to fit desire and not be regulated. And so Arkansas is very good with homeschooling. I know Tennessee is and Texas and Missouri, same thing. So all your Midwest states, for the most part, are very pro homeschooling. And so, you could have a private school, and it would be very hard, I think, the government to come after you if you're having literally a private school. But homeschooling to us is really the way to go because it really gets the government out of the family and allows the parents to educate and train their children.
Thank you so much. I didn't want to cut Peter off. I've wondered about that for years. Go ahead, Peter. We got about a minute.
Yeah, I was just going to throw in there. I remember one of the Supreme Court cases that I was reading on this subject, and I forget which case it was, but they stated that, of course, they stated that constitutionally we have the right to choose who we associate with, but they also felt the need to state the negative. They said that not only do we have the right to choose who we associate with, we also explicitly have the constitutional right to choose who not to associate with. So obviously
right.
There were some, lawyers at the time that thought that, you could choose who to associate with, but you can't exclude everybody. And the Supreme Court felt that was such a severe threat to people's liberties that they had to then turn around and clearly state the negative. Like, you can choose who not to associate with as well, and that's important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great point.
So you're absolutely right. So I mean, we all of us want to associate with our own like-minded racial brothers and sisters, and there's nothing evil and wrong about that. And so yeah, we choose not to associate with non-whites, and so yeah, it's a great thing. Return of the Land is doing. Other people have done stuff like similar over the years and decades, and so keep it good work up.
Thank you so much, Jason. Thank you so much, Peter, and thank you so much, Tennessee Ben. Hopefully, we can get Peter back on again before too long, because there's a lot of other things we could ask. Anyway, people are going to bring in Paul Fromm after this segment. Let's be right back after this quick break.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
Get ready to be part of something incredible. We're breaking barriers and delivering the powerful stories that mainstream media won't touch. Your support is what fuels our mission to revolutionize journalism and bring you the truth. Join our passionate community of changemakers by donating at libertynewsradio.com today. Together, we're creating the future of news.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging on. Here's what we're going to do. We've tried to cram about 4 hours into three. Jason Robb, my spirit son, he's going to tell us this segment of what went on with the big Congress up in Zinc, Arkansas, Harrison, Arkansas, about the Knights Council of the Ku Klux Klan, which I'm a very proud supporter of. I'm so proud to have them on this program. And we're going to cover that for a segment. And then we're going to bring in Paul Fromm has agreed to come in and tell us about everything. He's got some great stuff as usual. So we're trying to cram in a lot in a short amount of time. So Jason, what did go on up there at tonight's Congress this past weekend?
Yeah, so we had just this past weekend, Labor Day weekend, we had the Knights Party National Congress. It was really good turnout. The weather was nice. It was in the mid 80s to low 80s. It had not rained for a couple weeks, so we were kind of concerned that we might have a burn ban. But then it rained probably 3 or 4 days before the Congress, and so the county did not have to issue a burn ban, so we were really happy about that, because at the end of our Congress, we always had the traditional Christian cross lighting. And so we were really happy about that. But we had a great turnout. We had a great lot of different various speakers. We had one of our recruiters from California. We had another recruiter from Tennessee that spoke, and then we also had course, myself, Pastor Rob, who's my father, who's the National Director of the Knights, and then we had Rachel, who's one of the, our national organizers for the Knights, and then we had various other speakers. And then one of the speakers we did have was Paul Fromm. Now, Paul was not there, but he did send us a video of what's going on in Canada. And that was a very big hit because we have a lot of members there that is very fully aware of who Paul Fromm was. And so they were able to watch the video, and it was a really great, great event. We had, it started Friday, and we have it all day Saturday and all day Sunday. And so we'll have people that will come Saturday. Some people will not come Sunday. We have others that will come Sunday and not come Saturday. So we always have a lot of people that will come and go throughout the weekend. But we probably had a couple hundred people throughout the whole weekend, which was really nice. We had a great turnout. We had a lot of families, a lot of children and teenagers that were there at the Congress, and we were very happy about as well, because it's always good to see younger folks and kids and families there. And so the theme of our Congress was reclaiming our racial mandate. And we really wanted to focus on the fact that, you know, as white people, we have to reclaim the racial mandate, our ability to be vocal, to be out there as much as we can. And you know, we believe that that is something that every person has to do. Not everyone can do the same thing, but everyone can do something. And so that's why, you know, our focus was reclaiming our racial mandate, to really stress upon our people that, you know, we can do things. And one of the things we also did at the Congress, we are the what we've been calling the Big Beautiful Building, which is the Christian Revival Research and Development Center. We show the progress that's happening in that building. Museum part is about halfway done. We have the lights and electricity almost all installed, and so now we're getting ready to paint and do flooring. And that museum is going to house a lot of artifacts from various racial organizations and groups over the years. And so people are really able to see some just artifacts of that from the past. And so people were really happy about that. And if anybody gets the American Free Press, there was a recent article in the last issue about the building there and our and the project. So overall, it was a really a great event. Lot of people and people had just a good feeling of kind of rejuvenating. So when they go back from Congress and go to their local communities, they are re-energized to continue to spread the word of what we always call the White Christian Revival. We believe that is very important for our people to be a voice and a vocal to our cause as much as they can, their neighbors, their friends, co-workers. And so that was something that we just were really wanting to stress. And so we're really happy, and the cross-lighting was a very awe-inspiring at the end of the Congress, which is Sunday evening, and we had a lot of Klansmen in their robes with a traditional cross lighting, and we had Steve from Oklahoma. He sang the old rugged cross.
Oh, and, man, he does a great job.
It's just a really a peaceful atmosphere when you see the cross and Steve's singing the old rugged cross. And it's really silent and gets you to really start thinking about what we have lost over the years, but also the future we still have worth fighting for. And so we just really left Congress, you know, really energized and to continue their work for another year.
You know, if I can make a comment here, Pastor Rob is a good friend of mine. And he is a man who is not just a talker, but he's a planner and a doer. And I have a little bit of a contribution to that museum. It's just such a wonderful idea for continuity. So many leaders in our movements have, you know, when they pass on, everything goes. That's the end of it. And you know, I can think of a number of people. I won't name names, but and it's sad, and it's hard to plan for the future. But that museum, which has acquired artifacts and photos and letters and memorabilia of leaders of our movement. I've had made a small contribution in that. I knew a man up here, a great patriot, a very eccentric man. He spent time in jail during World War II, John Ross Taylor. And Pastor Rob asked me if I could, you know, collect some stuff on him. It wasn't all that easy, but I've, through the help of my friend Jürgen Neumann, has picked up a number of videos over the years where he may have spoken at a meeting or made some comments, and I've got pictures but what Pastor Rob has done is leaving something solid, as part of our history, and I think that's just such an amazing achievement, and I have nothing but respect for the Rob family.
Same here. One of my favorite items. By the way, my very favorite part of the council is always the cross lighting. That's if you're a white person, if you have one molecule, one cell of DNA left in your body that's really truly white, goes back to your ancient European ancestors, you will be aroused. It's in your DNA. It's in your blood. Even if you don't know it, it's there. I know this is kind of a poor analogy, but people have asked me, I've been an outdoorsman all my life. They ask me, how will I know if I see a poisonous snake? And I say, well, here in the South, the only kind of snakes we have are pit vipers. And I can guarantee, double down to you, when you see a pit viper, you will know it's poisonous. You won't have to wonder. It's instinct. You can just look at them. It's like looking to the Satan into their eyes. Their head's so perfect shape. I know it's a very poor analogy, but if when you see that cross sliding and you're participating with all these wonderful people up there, it's a religious experience. It's a godly experience, because our people are truly the people of God, and I guarantee that it'll bring it out of you. Something I would love to see, Jason, when I get to come up there, I would absolutely positively love to see the printing press of George Rankin Rockwell. I think y'all have that up there in the museum, if I'm not wrong.
We do, and we also have been able to obtain an original book, This Time the World, that was actually printed on that. And
Wow. So
it's, I mean, a lot of people were excited about that, and we also have obtained letters and correspondence between George Lincoln Rockwell and Ralph Forbes. Ralph Forbes was his lieutenant commander in California. He was also a Christian Identity pastor who lived in Russellville, Arkansas, a good friend of ours. But we were able to obtain from Forbes before he passed away probably 30, 40 letters, correspondence between those two in the 60s of them coordinating, you know, different activities and rallies and demonstrations and stuff like that. And so, we're just trying to preserve as much as we can of our, what we call our heroes. You know, people, our enemy wants to shove our heroes down the memory hole. And we are doing, it might be, you know, just a big task, but we're trying to do what we can to make sure that doesn't happen, because we want people to come there and young folks come there and see that there's been people for decades trying to fight for their future. And we want them to know that, you know, there have been people for decades that have been doing that, trying to do what they can to help preserve their culture and heritage, and knowing that there's people out there that's trying to fight for them. And knowing that just because they found out about the racial movement doesn't mean that it has not existed for, you know, decades. And so
we have to go a quick break, Jason. We'll come back to that point before we go to Paul as soon as after this break. Be right back, people.
Your daily Liberty Newswire.
You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from Town Hall. I'm Mary Rose. A judge has blocked the Trump administration from ending legal protections for Venezuelans and Haitians.
The ruling means 600,000 Venezuelans whose temporary protections expired in April or whose protections were set to expire September 10th have status to stay and work in the U.S. It also protects about 500,000 Haitians. U.S. District Judge Edward Chen, who issued the ruling, says Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem exceeded her authority in ending protections. I'm Mike Hempen.
In the aftermath of the deadly July 4th weekend flooding in Texas that killed children and counselors at Camp Mystic, Governor Greg Abbott has signed new safety measures into law.
The bills that aim to improve the safety of youth camps was given final legislative approval this week in Austin. Among other things, they prohibit cabins in dangerous parts of flood zones and require camp operators to develop detailed emergency plans. One measure allocates funding from the state's rainy day fund to help pay for disaster relief, including warning sirens and improved weather forecasting. John Scott reporting.
Author Christopher Scalia is concerned about the decline of fiction reading in America, and he's out with a book titled 13 Novels Conservatives Will Love But Probably Haven't Read.
When you speak to conservatives about fiction they like because it expresses conservative values or ideas, we tend to talk about the same handful of books. And most of those books are very good, but we're so focused on that small selection, I think we've lost sight of kind of the great literary tradition that's at our disposal.
President Trump will visit the Pentagon on Thursday to honor 9/11 and the service members and civilians who were killed when a plane crashed into the building on September the 11th. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Living with everyday pain is like having a voice that always says, no, no, you can't do that. You can't go there. You can't play your favorite sport. You better sit this one out. It's no way to live. If pain is affecting you, see how Relief Factor can help you get back to living life again on your terms. One where you say yes a whole lot more. Head over to ReliefFactor.com or give them a call at 800-4-RELIEF. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that fights pain naturally. Developed by a team of doctors and scientists, Relief Factor's unique formula of natural ingredients doesn't just mask pain, it helps reduce or eliminate it for good. Whether it's your back, neck, your joints, your muscles, Relief Factor can help you, as it has for so many others. Give Relief Factor's three-week quick start a try. It's only $19.95, a low-cost way for you to sort of take it out for a test drive. Less than a dollar a day. Go to ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-4-RELIEF. That's 800-4-RELIEF. See how you could live with less pain, and you can say yes to more of everything you want with Relief Factor.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing, and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force!
Dear Blood River Radio, I'll just bring you my grandfather, the great Hermann Göring. God bless him, the Reich Fuhrer, the Luftwaffe Fuhrer, the Luftwaffe. He's still buying them somewhere. He really is. Anyway, by God. Anyway, hey, I got to get back to Earth, y'all. We have real people.
Here's a useless piece of information. Hermann Göring was also a great hunter.
I know he's gonna be my great grandfather because that's why it took me like 14 years to get out of the grammar school because I used to spend all my time in the woods. If I wasn't trot line fishing, you frog gigging, or deer hunting, or turkey hunting, man, I tell you what, I was up. Well, I better not say it. At night, it was, I think nowadays they call it night riding. But anyway, we didn't have anything to ride around in. We night walked and night ran. We were well known to the pulling side here in Memphis. But anyway, I was just telling people. I got to fall off the handle one more time. I was just telling Paul and my spirit son Jason. If somebody calls you a Nazi, say, well, God bless you. What was your first clue? Thank you so much. You know, when I was up at my Montgomery Bell several years ago, we were going in. Matter of fact, we carried 7 hours of radio that day. We carried Sam's show, Blood River Radio, and James Edwards' show. I'm sure they're probably denying because they don't want to be put in jail because of the Blood River. But anyway, we were going in, and they had all these freaks, the BLM and the faggot Jews, Antifa behind the fence. So he said, hey, little man, you're a neo-Nazi, aren't you? I said, hell no, I'm not a neo-Nazi. I'm, by God, the real deal. I'm the real hardcore Nazi. My grandfather was Hermann friggin' Göring, sticking up at your butt. And you know what? And by the way, he was a lightweight. He was a moderate compared to me. If I had my way, you know what would be happening to you? And by that time, the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, the Tennessee Highway Patrol, the county cops, they kind of ushered me on down to the, but they were laughing their ass off too. They said, I can't believe that guy told me he was a real Nazi. The sissy ass neo Nazis, hell no, he's a real damn Nazi. And real proud of it too, by God. But anyway, I guess I got to come back down to Earth. We got the other Nazi, no, Paul, I better not call Paul Nazi because in Canada, that's a damn death penalty. But anyway, we're bringing Paul on now. People, this has been fly by your pants, give them hell, drop napalm, fire, hellfire and brimstone, Blood River Radio. But we got to go back to being intellectual now. We got two people here with a lot more education than I got. So I got to start acting civilized. Damn it, I got to act civilized. That's so boring. But anyway, we got to go back to Paul. You know what we did the first hour of people we were covering, the Congress, excuse me, the first segment. So what are we going to do? What do you got for us the rest of this hour, Paul?
Well, I've been for the last maybe 6 weeks been doing the German hour to inform people of German history and achievements because along with American Southerners and white people in general, they've really received a vile press. And it's always struck me as strange. The World War II has been over for 80 years. I imagine, maybe only one person out of every 10 is 80 or older. And yet you would think World War II was right around the corner. There's more huffing and puffing and hollering about Hitler and anti-Nazi than there probably was during the war. And it's defamed the German people. So what I wanted to talk about today, if you ask the average person, well, who declared World War II? They'd say, well, Hitler did. And well, who declared war against Britain? Hitler did. Hitler attacked Poland, and France and England then declared war on Germany. Poland was really none of their concern. So, okay, if you ask the average person, well, why did Hitler attack Poland? Oh, he wanted to conquer the world.
Hey, Paul.
Well, that's not.
I got to point out one quick thing here. I think I've done once before. This is what amazes me. If you have noticed, people, two entities attacked Poland. The other one was the communist Jew, led by the Jews, the Soviet Union at that time, when Hitler and attacked Poland to save the Germans, who were being mercilessly persecuted by the Poles. The Russians attacked Poland, too. The communist-led Russians, the Jews in the Soviet Union, ruled Russia. They had control of the Red Army. They attacked Poland from the east. I didn't want to interrupt you, Paul, but our people need to know that. They never mentioned that Russia also attacked. And the Russians being, Churchill said that the Jews had the Russian people by the hair of the head. And that's who was really attacking, Poland with the damn Jews. But I'm going to shut up and go back to you, Paul.
Yes, the Russians were cowardly and opportunistic after the Germans had decisively beaten the Polish army. And that wasn't hard. That's not to say the Poles didn't fight bravely. And they were there was one of the probably last cavalry charges in warfare. The Polish cavalry actually attacked the German army, with terrible consequences, unfortunately, yes, for the cavalry. But the Poles fought bravely, to be fair. And after they'd been beaten, then the Russians came in from the east. But why did Hitler attack Poland? Well, the common Jewish propaganda says, oh, because he wanted to conquer the world. Well, that was never in the cards. A country of 88 million people is not going to conquer the world. In the end, it couldn't even conquer the Soviet Union. It did a pretty good job at first, but it was never in the cards. That's what it was not about. But you pointed it out. Hitler had finally had it with the treatment of the German minority in Poland. Poland didn't even exist in the First World War. It was one of the creations of Versailles. And stuck inside Polish territory were large pockets of Germans, particularly in Silesia, or Schlesia, as they call it. And they were badly treated. The Poles killed about 58,000 Germans in 1938-39, and they made various agreements with Hitler that they would stop, they would guarantee the rights of the German minority, but they didn't. They were just dreadful to them. They ended up shutting down German language schools in Silesia, labor discrimination, and then outright murder by armed thugs. Finally, Hitler had it. They hadn't kept their promise, and there was also the issue of the swath of land up to the port of Danzig, or the Danzig corridor, which went through Polish territory, and that had been interrupted. And Germany needed that port for on the Eastern Baltic, finally his patience was at an end. And the only reason the Poles were so recalcitrant was that they had guarantees from the English and the French that if they were attacked, England and France would go to war. And that's a real problem. And you know, that you see the wisdom of George Washington when in his farewell address, he urged his countrymen to beware of entangling alliances. You know, once you're if your attack will attack the people who attacked you, that's a pretty open-ended promise. And so it encouraged the Poles to be belligerent and unrealistic. But it might have been better to be dishonorable than to go to war. The British should just have said, sorry, we didn't really mean that guarantee, but they didn't. But they did, and so they went to war. They were terribly unprepared for it, and as Pat Buchanan pointed out in his great book about Churchill's evil war role in both the First World War and the Second World War, Churchill was just a German hater of the first order, and he's a warmonger. Although he was not prime minister in 1939, but he was in the cabinet. He was agitating. He and a group of Jews and others were agitating behind the scenes. Yeah, yeah, go to war, go to war. It turned out very badly for England when Hitler spent the next number of months hoping that the British would reconsider, offering them one peace proposal after another, which they turned down. And finally, when he invaded France in 1940, he just absolutely cut through the French lines. The lines and that had held through most of the First World War, the German panzers took the clever route of simply not to hit, going at the wall.
We have to go to a break, Paul. We got to go to a quick break. People will be back in just a few minutes. Hang on to your seats.
Step into the boots of the American West with Range Magazine, where grit meets grace. This is a front row seat to the stories, struggles, and triumphs of ranchers, farmers, and stewards of the land. From jaw-dropping photography to no-nonsense reporting, Range brings you the untold tales of life on the range. Whether you're a city dweller with a cowboy's heart or living life where the pavement ends, Range speaks to the soul of the West. Subscribe today at rangemagazine.com.
Are you ready to stand up for your community and support your local sheriff? Join the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association and become a vital member of the Sheriff's Citizens Posse. At CSPOA.org, we empower citizens like you through weekly webinars, arming you with the knowledge to back your constitutional county sheriff. Together, we can uphold our Constitution and ensure liberty and justice for all. Your community needs you now more than ever.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Let me tell you something, boy, if I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
Ooh, Blood River Radio family. Lord knows I love that taking. Jock Ewing saying, no one gives you power, boy. He's talking to his little punk son. Real power you got to take. And that's the way it is in life. You know, and I'll just say this before we go. Y'all, people heard me say this many times before. George Washington said it. I don't think he did as good a job as Mao Zedong. George Washington said that, something like this. Politics is like fire. No, he said government. Government is like fire. Makes a dangerous servant and a cruel master. So therefore, in matters of politics, speak to me not of confidence in men. Instead, let us bind them with the chains of a constitution. Well, George was wrong, because as we can see, the constitution is worthless. Mao Zedong said it better. Mao Zedong was right on the money, guys. He said the power, politics, real politics, comes at the end of a gun barrel. And he was right. Politics and law, if you don't back it up with raw, merciless force, you're just farting in the wind. With that, going right back to our professor of history, Paul Fromm. Go ahead, Brother Paul.
That was the basically the point I wanted to make about the accusation that Germany caused World War II. Germany never had any intention to to have a conflict with Britain or France or the United States. It had a limited goal, and that was to protect the German minority in Poland. These folks were being abused, and despite numerous promises and that were consistently broken by the Poles, Hitler finally felt he had to do something. And you know where I get this? I get this from a couple of academic essays written by Poles, Polish scholars. If you Google cause of World War II, or rather cause of a German attack on Poland, 1939, you'll get absolutely Jewish propaganda. They will say, the Nazi propaganda claimed that the Poles were persecuted, but this is not true. It was true, and it's been widely documented. It's one of these things that slipped through down the memory hole, and it's a real lesson about how we can get sucked into wars. Now, I think President Trump is fairly clever. Like he has not promised he's going to have a treaty with the Ukraine where if Russia attacks America's at war. And I think that's wise. I don't like his Middle Eastern policy, and I don't like the endless support for Israel. And I fear that could still suck America into a war. That's not necessary. How is it our concern who rules in Iran? It shouldn't be. As long as Iran doesn't attack the United States, if they want to be ruled by some guy with a big funny cloak and what looks like an oversized towel on his head, well, that's their business. If they get rid of those guys and bring back somebody like the Shah's son or some other form of government, we should respect that. But it's not a cause for war. I fear that Israel seeks to drag America into conflict in the Middle East, and it's just not our war. And I speak from personal knowledge. I've been to the Middle East, and this may seem rather harsh, but they're all bad guys. Even the good guys are bad, and it's not like it's not simple. It's not just two sides, Jews versus the Muslims, or it's many. Sometimes the Christians are on the side of the Jews. Sometimes they're not. Not all the Muslims are on this. There's a minority of Muslims called the Druze, or they're kind of a sect, and they're on the side of Israel. So the Middle East is not a simple black and white. It's like a window that's been hit with a stone, and there's this spider network, and it's hard to figure out the little pieces all over the place. And a wise course would be we stay out of it. We'll trade with everybody, but we're not going to aid anybody. We should be kind of like a Switzerland. Well, you want to buy our goods? Great, we'll sell them. If we want to buy some of your stuff, we'll buy them. But we're not going to take sides because they're all bad. That's my impression anyway. And I was there, and I've been to Syria. I've been to Lebanon, and a lot of the stuff you're told is really bullshit. I had I didn't have a visa to get to Lebanon. Syria. And I thought, oh my God, they'll never let me in. I'm a Canadian. They'll assume I'm an American. I just went to the border and with my British friend, and she's very determined. You know, like She's an aristocrat. Nobody stands in her way. If she wants to do something, she's got to do it by hell. So say, well, we'll go to Syria. I said, we don't have visas. Anyway, we talked to a taxi driver in Lebanon, and he drove us to the border, and his brother is a taxi driver in Syria. He's going to meet us on the other side. I thought, we'll never get through. I go to the border post, we both do, and they looked at my passport because I've been to a number of countries, and the fellow's only question was, have you been to Israel? And I said, I will never go to that land until it's free. 25 American dollars, stamp on my passport. In 5 minutes, I'm out in the parking lot, and she is too. It wasn't hard at all. The only question was, you know, basically, are you a two-timer? Have you been to Israel? I hadn't been, and my answer seemed to please them, and off we went to Damascus. And I found Damascus didn't look like something out of Lawrence of Arabia. It was a modern, very interesting city. I really enjoyed my time in Syria.
That makes some of the most famous knives in the world.
Damascus steel.
Yes.
And you're an old-timer with weapons. When I was quite young, we were constantly told, do not fire modern
Damascus steel.
To an old Damascus steel, you'll blow it up, and probably yourself too.
Yes, I've tried everything, but I've never tried that because I've been warned about that Damascus steel. But I tell you, it makes some of the sharpest knives, some of the best knives in the world, are Damascus steel. And the Sheffield, England used to have a good reputation for making knives back when I was in grammar school. Also, was it the Solingen knives in Germany? But at least I'm getting us on the rabbit trail. Going back to Germany, Paul, one of the many reasons that Churchill despised, he hated Germans as long as, and so did Dwight David Eisenhower, may he rest in hell. He was jealous of Germany. Germany was literally kicking the hell out of the rest of the West, especially Britain. In every area, in trade, shipping, international trade, in industrial advancement, engineering, mathematics. They were making the greatest cars in the world, the greatest steel in the world. It was a German that invented, we mentioned rifles, the most famous rifle ever invented for hunting probably is the Mauser, the bolt-action rifle, that great claw extractor, they call it a controlled extension, assuming a controlled feed for if you're hunting dangerous game like a lion or grizzly. You want that, if you have your druthers, you want that controlled feed. Well, Paul Mauser came out with that design, I think, in 1898 with his famous 1898 Mauser 8x57 caliber rifle. They were just outstripping the world in everything. In fact, the Germans were so wealthy because, and this is during when the rest of the world, Mauer in depression, the British hated the Germans coming over there on vacation because the Germans were well fed, looked healthy, nice clothes, and the British were languishing in depression. I'm taking up too much of this time because we'll go back to you, Paul. We'll get about 2 minutes.
Yeah, and that's right. If you're talking about the 30s, it took Hitler all of 2 years to turn the German economy around. It was as battered and beaten, and there was so much poverty and near starvation, just as there was in Britain and the United States and Canada. And in 2 years, he turned it around. And I can well imagine, prosperous German workers visiting impoverished Britain. And there were intelligent people like our then Prime Minister, William Lyon Mackenzie King, who was so amazed. He said, we must inquire more carefully into what Mr. Hitler, how Mr. Hitler has accomplished this.
The first interstate system in the Autobahn. Well, Paul and Jason, we've run completely out of time. We have to segue into the third hour. We have to pick up Gene, the bitter ender, for the third hour. So thank you, man, so much for coming on. I love you, both you guys, like brothers, like Jason, like my son. You guys keep in touch. Please do. And y'all stay in touch with me. I'll stay in touch with y'all. And thank you guys for coming on. Yes, sir. Well, people, this is
great hearing you.
Yes, sir. We've transitioned to the third hour now. And, Paul, I will stay in touch with you and Jason. So, anyway, guys, go get some coffee. Be back. You're back in about 4.5 minutes. Be right back, folks.
And Jason's